On that journey, as I drew near Damascus about noon, a great light from the sky suddenly shone around me. I fell to the ground and heard a voice saying to me, "Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me?" I replied, "Who are you, sir?" And he said to me, "I am Jesus the Nazarene, whom you are persecuting." My companions saw the light, but did not hear the voice of the one who spoke to me. I asked, "What shall I do, sir?" And the Lord answered me, "Get up and go into Damascus, and there you will be told about everything appointed for you to do." Since I could see nothing because of the brightness of the light, I was led by hand by my companions and entered Damascus. And so the story continues. When we think of conversion, we often consider repentance and changing from our sinful ways to a more blessed way of life. Dramatic examples abound, like Augustine or Paul himself, or like my friend Michael, who moved from being a druggie to a very effective evangelical minister. We have other examples from Alcoholics Anonymous and so on, of people who've simply turned their lives around in remarkable ways. Often our sinfulness is either not noticed or not sufficient of sufficient moment to command our attention for a full-scale conversion, and we figure we've taken care of that at another time. But what if the real evil in my life has to do not with my sins of commission, but the things I don't even see, my sins of omission, a certain greatness that I'm just not fully aware of? In such a case, I'm not really conscious of the evil that is done or the good that is possible. What if my conversion has to do not with the things that I do that are clearly wrong, but with a certain lack of vital force, scope, or intensity, a certain authenticity in the good things that I do? What if my life is too modest? Today we have a wonderful story of Saul's transformation from a highly motivated and very destructive religious bigot to a person of faithfulness and personal holiness and integrity that has given formidable expression to our understanding of the practical form of our Christian religion, and has a great deal to do with the shape of the church itself. Paul was such a zealot that he would interfere with the religious freedom of choices of others, even when the choices were within acceptable civil norms. In today's idiom, Paul was an enthusiast, a veritable soft terrorist, if you will, in his bigotry and simplistic application of his religious belief. We would all do well to avoid religious leaders who are all too sure of exactly how other people should behave and are willing to use coercion and fear to keep them in line. For the most part, we are not like Paul. Our age, with some exceptions, is one of religious indifferentism. Whatever, we say, when religious differences arise. I believe that we're in need of a profound conversion that would involve some of the features that Paul experienced. Paul saw himself as an enforcer of the good, orthodoxy. He was not morally undisciplined, but a strict practitioner of a so-called holiness that, even by Jewish standards, engendered fear and guilt in others by its rigidity. In his conversion, God is calling him to a more balanced approach that can also respect the spirit of other people and give a fuller expression to the energies of his own soul that are now bound up in the service of an angry orthodoxy. We might try to evoke and identify such a transformation or conversion in our own life. We start by looking within, not at the obvious flaws or surface faults over which we express sorrow daily, But pay attention to our deepest feeling. Get in touch with our fears. Re-examine our dreams. Look at the needs of our world that are so obviously out of control. People have called this activity soul work, and many contemporary spiritual directors find that it is just what is lacking in our world, and sometimes even missing from the sensibilities and pronouncements of our churches. This is a vast and delightful subject. It leads people to become fully alive. We must prayerfully consider that the dramatic transformation that we see in Paul's life is the very thing that is missing from our personal religious experience, and certainly from the larger cultural scene in which we live. There are an infinite variety of ways in which one can come into contact with the Spirit and have one's soul fully come to life. Meeting a loving person, adopting a contemplative religious discipline, the experience of truth and beauty, really great preaching, the excellent presentation of the liturgy of the church's year, and so on. I would like to offer a very modest example that I experienced. When I was a very busy parish priest, I would give a good deal of energy to hearing confessions each week. I made it a point to get to the confessional well-rested, not in a rush. Over a period of time, I found that there were a number of people who would show up about once a month. Often they were from outside the parish. They needed a good listening and a few moments of prayer about their lives. They were not rushing to confess small infractions. They were doing soul work. I don't call this spiritual direction because as a Dominican, I would not favor a particular plan. God's ways are infinite, and I'd be just as delighted to discover a soul coming to life as a person struggling to relate his or her own life's pathway. And always this would be a wonderfully different and unique expression. This emerging life of the soul with its balance, beauty, and life-giving vitality is the conversion that I take from Paul's experience. So take time in these busy days. Enter the silence. Let the forces of life find a more balanced and satisfying expression in you. And meet your God along your pathway.